Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5 over North America and worldwide on the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay with us for tonight's special report on the national debt right after this message. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year and you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes, then you pay a 17% income tax on that $50,000 a second time, and that's another $8,500. Now, you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax, and that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%, not 15.3%. Now, isn't that just real special? And for more information about tax and status, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the national debt, looking at a little booklet here entitled Billions for the Bankers, Debts for the People, written by Sheldon Emery back in 1977. I reported on this booklet once before, but I wanted to draw your attention to the national debt because the national debt is $7 trillion worth of debt that you have gone surety for. You're a surety underwriter, a citizen of the United States, of course, is a surety underwriter for that national debt. And that national debt is owed by you all by yourself because it has attached to it joint and several liability. You know what joint and several liability means, boys and girls? Well, let me tell you a little story, and I'll show you how that works. I had a student here one time. He was from Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was a Seventh-day Adventist and belonged to the Adventist Church. In my tax and status school, we talk about joint and several liability, and I pointed out that oftentimes when people belong to a church, they become a member of that church, and as such, they become surety underwriters for the church's debt. He was absolutely incredulous. He said, no, that just can't be true. And I said, well, it isn't true in every church, in every organization. It really depends upon the organization and the charter that is recorded with the Secretary of State. But I said, it's very common, and it wouldn't be out of reason for you to be a surety underwriter of your church's debt. And he said, well, I'm not even sure. I don't even know if our church has a debt. And I said, well, if they're normal, they do. They built a building years ago, and they have credit. Churches have good credit. Churches have wonderful credit. Churches can go borrow money any day of the week. Churches don't borrow money the way you and I do. When we go to buy a house, we put 10% down or 5% down, and then we sign a promissory note based upon our income. Churches borrow money based upon the income of the members of the church. So when the church board of directors, the board of elders or deacons, goes into the bank and says, gee, we'd like to put an addition on or build a new, bigger, better church, and the bank looks at that and they say, well, what's your income? And they say, well, we generate about $4,000 a week. Our members donate $4,000 a week. That'd be $16,000 a month. So the bank takes a look at that and they say, well, that's good, that's good, that's wonderful. But what if, for some reason, these people don't give $16,000 a month? Then how are you going to make the payments? And you see, here's where the board of deacons just kind of goes silent. Well, then the banker might say, well, would you like to be the surety underwriter for the debt? In other words, let's suppose you want to borrow $1 million and you get $16,000 a month to service this debt. And you're going to pay us, you know, say $8,000 a month, $60,000 a year over the next 30 years or something like that to service this debt to build this new church. And that's all well and good, and that's great, and we're happy to do that for you. But just in case somebody is unable to make this $8,000 a month payment, who's going to be the surety underwriter? Who's going to be the guarantor? Now, you know, you probably got a teenage boy or girl, and they wanted to buy a car, and you had to go down and co-sign for them. That's what a surety underwriter is, a co-signer. So this young fellow went over to the Secretary of State, and he got the church charter, and he found that there were about 200 members in the church, and that the church had about a $200,000 debt. And sure enough, there was a paragraph in the charter which says, in fact, that the members of the church are the guarantors or the surety underwriters of the church's debt. So the banker looks at this, and he says, oh, you've got Dr. Jones in your church. And you've got dentist so and so, and you've got manufacturer Bob Kirby in your church. And these are what we call deep pocket creditors. And they're members of the church. Now, they probably don't know and have never had this explained to them, so let's learn a lesson here. When you're a member of a church or the NRA or some other organization, there's a charter. That charter is filed with the Secretary of State. The terms and conditions of that charter in relationship to the members is called an adhesion contract. It's a contract that you've never read, never seen, don't even know exists, but it's on file somewhere. And you are obligated or liable for a debt that you didn't even know existed. Is that fair? Is that righteous? Is that legal? Well, it's legal. I don't know if it's ethical. I don't know if it's moral. I don't know if it's, I'll leave that up to you. But that's the way the game's played. And so before you join the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, or the local Methodist church, you might want to take a look at the charters of these institutions and organizations and find out what the liabilities are to the members. That's a wild new concept. Most people don't care. See, most people don't really care about where they sign their name or what they obligate themselves to, but it might be an educational experience for you to find out that you are a surety underwriter for your church. Now, let's suppose that the church doesn't make its payments. So you've already agreed to make this payment. What if you happen to have $200,000 in the bank and the other 199 members don't have any money in the bank? Well, then the bank simply goes to you and takes all $200,000 out of your account under the acceleration clause of the mortgage and the membership charter of the church. They don't even need a hearing. They don't even need to sue you. You don't even have to know about it. You could go write your payroll checks, and they'd all bounce. The bank doesn't even have to tell you they took the money. That's because you've already agreed to it. It's already in the contract. So the bank takes the $200,000. Now, it's not equitable for you to pay the whole $200,000. This gives you, then, an equitable right of recovery against the other 199 members of the church for $1,000 each, plus costs. You're only obligated to pay $1,000, but you've got to collect it from the other 199. The bank doesn't have to go to all 200 of you, initiate legal actions to collect this. They're not going to do that. And they're not going to foreclose on the church and sell it. That gives them a bad public relations image in the community. Can you imagine the Bank of America foreclosing on the Church of Christ in your local town, the local Methodist church? We see, and they'd say, well, here's Scrooge incarnate. Banks aren't run by people that are dumb. What they do is they have people that aren't too bright signing surety agreements, people that don't even know these agreements exist. Now, the national debt is like that. You see, your citizenship, just go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary under citizenship and find out what your obligations are to your nation, your country. Well, you got some pretty heavy obligations there, pretty heavy obligations. And, of course, the government has some obligations also. And the government is a paper fiction. It's a corporation for which all of the stockholders, the citizens, have guaranteed the credit. Now, you've got a board of directors there in Congress, and they're just authorizing the spending of $87 billion in Iraq and $400 billion for national defense, and they're running a big deficit every year. Did you notice that? Yeah, they're running this great big deficit, and you're obligated to pay that, along, with the other 284 million American citizens. But, they may just come along and take everything you've got and then let you sue the other 284 million Americans. Now, you may say, well, I don't have $7 trillion, so I don't have to worry about paying it. Don't think for a minute now that you have to have the whole $7 trillion. You don't have to have the whole $200,000 that the bank is owed by the church. You could have $50,000 and three other members could have $50,000 each, and they just go to you four members and take the $200,000. Or maybe there's only one member that has $50,000 in the bank, and they just take the whole $50,000 from that member and then initiate liens and levies against the other 199 members. Come on, guys. Let's grow up and get real. We're dealing in a real world here. So the government can come and take everything you've got, sell it on the courthouse steps. Now, there are going to be people with money. There always have been. There always will be. And the people with money will be the people who are called the insiders today. These will be people that are members of the Masonic Lodge. For instance, I happen to know a fellow who's in the Masonic Lodge down in Texas. And he happens to be a member of the Volunteer Fire Department who happens to be associated with Homeland Security. So a full 3 or 4 days ahead of any changes in the security alert or anything that's going on, Homeland Security passes out to all the firemen and police chiefs and et cetera. And then you, the lay public, the citizens, you get your information from Dan Rather, dead last. You're going to be the last guy to know anything about terrorists or terrorism or the latest moves that are to be made. Now, the United States government is not a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The United States government is an oligarchy that is operated by the banking institution of America called the, I said the banking institution of America called the Federal Reserve Bank. Federal Reserve Bank runs the government. And the chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve is Alan Greenspan. Alan Greenspan works for the stockholders of the bank. The stockholders are the Rockefellers, Harrimans, Astors, and so on. And those are the people who own and run the United States of America. They've got the gold and silver. When the paper money goes bad, they will have the gold and silver, and they will foreclose on all of the assets. Then they'll come up with a new color money, pass out the new color money. And then they will own you, own your house, own your company. They'll own everything. That's their objective, by the way. They want to own everything. There'll be a few exceptions. You know, there's a little bit of private property in Russia and China. And there'll be a little bit of private property left over here in the United States. People that deal in property and obey God and keep His commandments will have a little bit of property. They might have quite a bit of property. I don't know how much, but they'll have a little bit. They'll have a whole lot more than you're going to have. Because if you're in debt, you're not going to have any property at all. In fact, you don't have any property today. Property is a very rare commodity here in the United States because property has been subjugated to the first plank of the Communist Manifesto, which calls for an abolition of all right to property. An abolition of all right to property. Now, under our Constitution, you can still own property. But if you're going to own it, you had to buy and pay for it, and you had to have gold and silver to do that. And that gets to be a little bit tricky. Now, for the purposes of our story here on the national debt, you do understand now that you're a surety underwriter for your church's debt, probably. You're a surety underwriter, possibly, for any of the other groups and organizations you belong to. You're a surety underwriter for your house, savings and loans, the derivatives bubble, the housing bubble, the savings and loan bubble, the national debt bubble. You know, all of these institutions, we saw this just not too long ago back in the first George Bush administration when the savings and loans went belly up. It was the American taxpayers that bailed them out. You remember that? Now, America is running a huge balance of payments deficit. It's about $550 billion a year, and we owe that money to the Chinese. Now, the Chinese, remember, used to be our enemies. They're not our enemies anymore. They're our masters now. Sure. You see, when you're a sovereign and you're fighting for your rights, you have a guy over here who's fighting to take your rights and your property away from you. He's your enemy. Once he succeeds in taking all of your rights and property away from you, he's no longer your enemy. Now he's your master. Masters are not enemies of their subjects. Now, sometimes subjects get a little uppity and become enemies of their masters, for which then the master has to slap his subject down. But we Americans are pretty good subjects, and we're paying our dues. We are surrendering. In every aspect of life, we have surrendered our national parks to the United Nations. We have surrendered our public education system to the United Nations. And we are busily working for the United Nations and the New World Order over in Iraq. We're spending our blood, our treasure. We're paying for all of it. You don't see the Russians over there getting shot at and killed. You don't see any Chinese over there getting shot at and killed now, do you? Chinese economy is growing 8 to 10% a year while the American economy is doing what? It's a master-servant relationship here, and this master-servant relationship comes from contracts. These contracts are described in the Bible as being surety underwriting contracts, which are prohibited. So we're prohibited from participating in unjust weights and balances, contracts or treaties with foreign and alien gods, that is, nations, prohibited from practicing usury and interest, prohibited from using unjust weights and balances in the form of stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments. We're doing all of the above, and of course there's a penalty. And when we do that, we cannot be sovereign and we cannot be free. So there's going to be some limitations on your freedoms. And that's why you're an employee. You see, if you weren't an employee, then you'd be self-employed. If you were self-employed, you'd be your own master. You're not your own master, you're an employee. Somebody tells you when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. And we call that your corporate employer. He tells you that 8 o'clock is when we start. He tells you whether you're going to get overtime or not. He tells you whether you're going to be in management or not. He tells you whether or not you're going to work next week or not. You don't make those kinds of decisions. Those are decisions that are made for you. You can work for government. You can work for General Motors. You can work for Joe Finkelstein. Now, there are a few people out there, you know, that are the Joe Finkelsteins that are working for themselves as masters. Well, if that's the case, then you're working for the United States government because now you've got all of these rules and regulations, customs, usages, and practices that you've got to follow. And any one of you who is a small businessman, self-employed with employees, you know what I'm talking about. You're not your master. You are the subject and servant of the government. There's a bureaucracy that comes around and tells you when to get up, when to go to bed, when to come in, when to go out, when to stand up, and when to sit down. And those boys are called OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and you know what I mean? Zoning, planning, building departments. Now, Americans living in what is called the richest nation on earth seem always to be short of money. Wives are working in unprecedented numbers. Husbands hope for overtime hours to earn more or take part-time jobs in the evenings and weekends. Children look for odd jobs for spending money, and the family debt climbs higher and higher. And psychologists say one of the biggest causes of family quarrels and breakups is arguments over money. Much of this trouble can be traced to our present debt money system. Now, very few Americans realize why Christian statesmen wrote into our Constitution, at Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution, that Congress shall have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Now, they did this, as we're going to see, in prayerful hope that it would prevent love of money from destroying the republic that they had just founded. And we'll see how subversion of Article 1 has brought on to us the evil of which God's word has warned. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance. Why did we need Congress to coin and emit money? Well, it was so that we could participate in trade, commerce, business, and industry. We wanted a commerce clause in our Constitution. We want to participate in trafficking. We want to deal in commerce. God instructed us that we're not to deal in limited liability, but strict liability, and that we're not to deal in unjust weights and balances, but to deal in just weights and balances. And we said, no, God, you made a mistake, and we're going to fix your mistake. We're going to have a commerce clause, and we're going to have a Congress. We're going to have a body to emit our bills of credit. Well, okay, so much for the law of God, okay? Now, if God told you, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, and you give God the finger and say, well, yeah, I'm going to have unjust weights and balances in my bag, Mao Zedong, I think, summed it up quite succinctly when he said, political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. Political power comes from the muzzle of a gun. So in the final analysis, when you give God the finger, what's he going to do about it? Well, what God is going to do about it, he's going to establish a natural penalty so that you can burn yourself when the time is right. Thou shalt not commit adultery is one of those kind of laws. It does not require a policeman to be out here giving you a traffic ticket or giving you a ticket when you go into Flo's place or come out of Flo's whorehouse. It doesn't need it. AIDS, herpes, and VD takes care of that. That's the penalty for the violation of that law. It's called a natural penalty. God has organized into the environment, into the creation, natural laws. Gravity. You can use gravity to fly an airplane. That same gravity will destroy the airplane if you don't fly it correctly according to laws of aerodynamics. Aerodynamics, part of the law of physics. Physics is the law of the universe. And I don't make the laws of physics, aerodynamics, or gravity. But you and I both know that when we're driving a car down the road, and we're going along 70 miles an hour, and maybe it's night, and you come to a sign, and the sign shows an arrow turning about 90 degrees to the left, and it's got another little sign under it says 35. See, immediately you know. You look at your speedometer, you're going 70. The next time you come to one of those signs, now just picture this, you're driving down the road about 70, and you come to the sign, and there's an arrow, and it turns to the left, and underneath it, it says 30. Speed up to 85. Why don't you do that? Then write me an email and let me know how it came out. Now, you people aren't stupid. You know that when you see that sign, that you don't have to obey the letter of the law. You know that that sign is an overreaction to reality, that it says slow to 30 miles an hour. That's the recommended speed, but you know that you're driving a 280Z or a Porsche and that you can take that turn at least 40 or 45 miles an hour, don't you? And you will. You're not going to slow down to 30. You're going to slow down to about 50. And then as you're heading into the turn, you might slow it down a little bit more to 40, but you know that you can get away with breaking that law. You can stretch it. You can bend it. And you've probably got a fuzzbuster on the dashboard of your car, and that helps you a great deal because when the whistles and bells go off, you slow down from 90 to 70 as you ease by this cop who's sitting behind a billboard with his radar detector on, and then when you get down the road a little ways, you speed back up to 80 or 90. Now, you know that. Now, unfortunately for us, we go to public school, and we live here in a world of crime. We live in a world where we break laws, bend rules, and get away with it, or we try to get away with it all of our lives. And it carries over into every aspect of living. So it's not surprising that you're going down to Flo's warehouse to tear off a little on Friday night because, you know, and after all, you know, all the rest of the guys are doing it. And okay, so maybe you'll come down with chlamydia or venereal warts or something. You know, you'll go to the doctor and he'll give you a shot of penicillin and he'll give you forgiveness of sin and you can get away with it. Not everybody gets away with it. Some of you people are coming down with AIDS and that's kind of bad news. That's fatal. And, you know, some of you are coming down with the venereal diseases that last a lifetime. They're not curable. They're just treatable. So you're always going to be going to the doctor and spending money on the treatment for your venereal warts, herpes, or something else. You're always going to be embarrassed by these herpes sores around your mouth. And everybody knows, hey, I know what you've been done. You got herpes sores. I know what you've been done. In fact, you get so many people with sexually transmitted diseases today, you know, it's kind of getting to be the norm. It's like sodomy. You know, the sodomites can come out of the closet because they're taken over. They're going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah. There's only going to be three of us that are straight. Everybody else will be a sodomite. So there isn't any need. You know, in San Francisco, all your public officials are sodomites. The electorate are made up of sodomites. But when we're talking about law over here, I'm going to explain something that's really kind of wild and off the wall. You know as well as I do that the law of gravity is kind of unforgiving. So when we're flying airplanes, we're very careful to buckle up our seat belts and go through the entire checkoff list and make sure that this airplane's running right up to power. And you know, we follow all the rules and regulations. You know that the family that flies together dies together. So to prevent that untimely death, you obey all the laws of physics. I mean, boy, we are really, really law-abiding people when we're flying airplanes and flying space shuttles. When we're driving race cars, you know, we call it safety. You know, we just want to be real safe here. People don't pay attention to the laws of God in the same way that they do the laws of physics and aerodynamics and safety. They get a little careless. And that carelessness translates into poverty when we're dealing with economics. If you're in debt and you can't pay all of your bills, it's because you're breaking a law and you're paying a penalty. Now, the states are in debt and they can't make their payments, they can't pay their bills, and the federal government's in debt and it can't pay its bills. And we've been dealing in this paper money. You know, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Enron went upside down. WorldCom went upside down. These big multinational corporations have been going broke using unjust weights and balances. And ultimately, the entire world's economy is going to collapse. It's going to affect all of us. We're all going to get punished. The natural punishment for the use of unjust weights and balances, practicing usury and interest, stocks and bonds and so on, is poverty. That's the penalty. You got that $100,000 worth of equity in your $200,000 house and you're going to lose it. And that's going to be your penalty. The interest that you're paying on that note is the penalty. It's like a fine that you pay every month for violating that law that says you shall not participate in usury. It's about 7 or 8 statutes on usury. And if you can't pay it, you can't charge it because you'd be an accessory before and after the fact. Now, I just point that out to you as we get into the second half. Now, we're talking about the national debt. That national debt for which you owe your prorated share of about $20,000. When that thing comes due and payable, it's going to be collected, and it's going to be collected from you. You're going to pay your prorated share because the debtor is servant to the lender. I didn't make that law. God did. And you're a servant, not a master, if you're a citizen of the United States and you owe and own your prorated share. Hey, we'll come back to this in a minute. Hang on here. We got to take a little break. You're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Hey, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying about $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That is if you're self-employed and you're paying that 15.3% advertised rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 a second time? But you know as well as I do, the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax, then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax. Well, that means you're paying 17% of $7,650 twice, and 17% of $7,650 is $1,300. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from each and every one of you who pays that tax. Hey, let's deal in unjust weights and balances. Don't you just love it? Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just real special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, informative. Best of all, it's free. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the national debt. In order to talk about the national debt, we have to talk about money. To talk about money, we have to talk about billions for the bankers and debts for the people. Now, the people are in debt. The bankers are sitting on top of all the wealth of the world. It's a natural cause and effect relationship caused by unjust weights and balances. You see, if we, the citizens of the United States, had obeyed God, kept His commandments, what we would have done is, in 1933, when they told us to turn in our gold, we wouldn't have done it. Instead, we would have continued using gold and silver. We would have bought and sold and traded. And the depression would have gone away, and we would have lived happily ever after, and we'd never have another depression again. Well, assuming, of course, that we practiced the land Sabbaths and Jubilees and years of release and so on. There are 15 agricultural laws, and there's about 16 or 17 or 18 of these economic laws, 18 health laws. And each and every one of these laws has a penalty, a built-in automatic penalty. And if you violate these laws, well, then that penalty just gets to be automatic. Just like the laws of physics. Just try taking that 30-mile-an-hour turn at 85 miles an hour and then let me know how it came out. Maybe I'll try. Give me a report. Now, I think that it's going to come out bad for you because there's a natural law. Now, let's learn a lesson here about geometric progression because this is what you're involved in. It's called geometric progression. If you took a penny, I'll tell you a little story here. A little boy, he takes the family horse down to the farrier, the horseshoer. I call them farriers. And the farrier says to the little boy, I'm running a special today. Now, your daddy sent you down here with $12, didn't it? The little boy said, yeah. And $12 is my regular, ordinary, everyday garden variety price for shoeing a horse. Do it every day, $12. But I have a special. And if you're a very smart, intelligent little boy, which I can see you are, very bright and intelligent little boy, you'll take advantage of my special. A special. You know what that means, little boy? That means a discount. If you take advantage of my discount policy, you will save money, and you can take the money that you save and go down and buy ice cream. Oh, a little boy listened to the farrier. You know, he's a big, tall adult, and little boys tend to believe adults, you know, just like we adults tend to believe our government. After all, the government's like an adult to us. The government is like a god to us. We trust our government. We have faith in our government. We trust our President George Bush. We have faith in our institutions like the Federal Reserve and the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security and so on. That's called idolatry in the Bible, but we Americans have faith in these institutions because our government, our United States of America, is our God. Well, the little boy has faith in the adults. He has faith in the farrier. The horseshoer isn't going to take advantage of a little kid 12 years old. Come on, let's grow up and get real. The government isn't going to take advantage of our senior citizens on Medicare and Social Security. Come on. No, are they? Or are they? I don't know. I'll leave it up to you. You decide. Is your government taking advantage of senior citizens? This year they gave them a 3.5% cost of living index adjustment in their Social Security payments. Now tell me government isn't taking care of the elderly. Of course, the inflation rate this year is running 8-10%. So I guess you adults, you elderly adults, are going to have to take it in the shorts for that other 5-6% then, aren't you? But your government's looking out for you. Your government's taking care of you. Always remember that. So the little boy said, yes, yes, I want to take advantage of the special. It's just like big boys and girls. Yes, yes, I want to vote for George Bush. Yes, yes, I want to vote for John Kerry. Yes, I want to participate in Social Security. I want to get a job. I want jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, we have confidence, faith in our institutions, our government officials. So the farrier said to the little boy, here's the special. Here's the deal. I'm going to give you these four horseshoes. So he picked up four horseshoes and he gave them to the little boy and he says, now do you see, I've got your best interests at heart. I want to help. I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Let me give you these four horseshoes free. And now they're yours. If you want to, you can turn around and just walk out of here, little boy. You can take your four horseshoes as my free gift to you. How was it worded? I was listening to an ad the other day. It said something like, we believe in you. We have faith in you. You know, when somebody says to me, I believe in you, I got faith in you, grab your ass. Hang on tight. Don't let go. So the little boy took the horseshoes, and then the farrier said, now here's all I want from you, now that you own the horseshoes. You give me one of your horseshoes, and I will furnish the nails. And I just want you to pay me one penny for the first nail. And I'll nail this horseshoe on with one nail for one penny. And then the second nail, you pay me 2 pennies. And the third nail, you pay me 4 pennies. And we'll just double it like that until we get to 32 nails. Now, the little boy, he trusts the horseshoer. He gave him the horseshoes. He said, I've got faith in you, little boy. You're bright. You're ambitious. You're smart. Take advantage of the special. And the little boy did. So let's just take 0.01 times 2 equals 2. So the second nail costs you 2. Times 2 is 4. Times 2 is 8. Times 2 is 16. Times 2 is 32. Times 2 is 64. So by the time we get the eighth nail in here, we get 64 cents. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. And I add that up, and it's $1.27 to put the first shoe on. That doesn't sound too bad, does it? Sounds pretty good to me. All right, so here we come. Hand me shoe number 2, little boy. So he takes the second shoe, which is doubled. That's 256, 512, 1024, 2048, 4096, 8192, and $163.84. Well, we got two horseshoes on, though, don't we? Now, you can come in here and pay the regular price, and it costs $12. You got to buy four horseshoes, 32 nails, and pay for the labor. $12. Unless, of course, you want today's special. Now, Americans bought into Social Security because they wanted the special. And they sold us the special on geometric progression. Let me give you an illustration of how this geometric progression fits right in with your national debt, because you see, there's no free lunch, boys and girls, and you got to pay for everything that you get. Now, that's just where reality is. It's the laws of economics. Franklin Roosevelt came to us in 1935, and he said, you know what America needs is a social security system like all the nations around us. That's the way Paul Warburg sold the Federal Reserve from 1907 to 1912. He came over here from the Bank of England. He lectured at Yale and Harvard. He went around the country from coast to coast and border to border, and he said, you know, Americans, what you need is a central bank like all the nations of Europe. America had come from being 13 third world nations, banded together in 1787, and by 1900 had become the world's leading commercial nation. We had the greatest gross domestic product. They called it GNP, gross national product in those days. We were the world's greatest military power, economic power. You know, we had an empire over here. And we did it all with no central bank. Warburg comes over and says, you know what you guys need over here is a central bank, like all the nations of Europe. I think we needed a central bank like we needed a third nose, sixth nostril, fifth thumb, second head. And the people of America said, well, I guess if our leaders tell us that that's what we need, I guess that's what we need. You know, by 1913, Americans were no longer able to think for themselves. Couldn't figure this out. Went ahead and took the special. Woodrow Wilson came up with the special and said, buy the Federal Reserve, you'll love it. Franklin Roosevelt came along and he expanded on the Ponzi scheme. He said, what we need is Social Security. And the people of America said, yeah, all we have to fear is fear itself. We have faith in our president. We don't have faith in God, but we have faith in Franklin D. Roosevelt. We don't believe God could create the earth and the universe in 6 days, but we believe in evolution. We believe it could all exist, happen by happenstance, and put itself together all by itself without any intelligence whatsoever. Well, boys and girls, by the 20th century, we Americans had lost the capacity to think, reason, and come to logical, intelligent conclusions. We could only blindly follow in faith our leaders who told us this is the right thing to do. And so we did it. Social Security started out in 1935. By 1940, the first check was written. There were 80 people paying in for everybody drawn out. Sounds pretty good. You got 80 people paying in for each person drawing out. By 1945, it had dropped to 45 people paying in for everybody drawing out. By 1957, it had dropped to 16 people paying in for everybody drawing out. By 1992, it was 3.5 people paying in. No, it was 4 people paying in for everybody drawing out. By 1996, 3.5 to 1. Today, it's 3 to 1. And in 2020, it will be 1 to 1. In just 16 more years, for everybody that's paying in, there will be one person drawing out. Isn't that just real special? All right. Now, when is Social Security going to collapse? Well, I don't know. But I do know this. If it's moved from 80 to 1 to 1 to 1, then it's going to move from 1 to 1 to 80 to 1 in the opposite direction, isn't it? So at some point in time, when it gets down to 1 to 1, that means that every day when you get up and go to work and pay your Social Security taxes, you'll be serving and supplying and paying for one person on Social Security. And then at the next doubling period, there will be 2 people. So you'll go to work and you'll support 2 people. And then you'll go to work and support 4 people, and then 8 people, and then 16 people, and then 32, 64, and 128 people. And one of these days, you'll be supporting 163.84 people with your Social Security payments. Now, I don't know if you believe in Social Security or not. And maybe you do. Let's just, for the sake of our argument here, say, my God, I believe in Social Security. I have faith in George Bush and the Congress and the economic system and Enron and Global Crossing and WorldCom. But I do know this. At some point in time, you're physically going to run out of energy. At some point in time, you're not going to be able to support 2 other people plus yourself, or 4 other people plus yourself, or 8 other people plus yourself. I don't know how many people you can support, but I do know this. You can't support everybody in America by yourself. And at some point in time, you're going to give up and quit or drop over dead. Now take 32, starting with a penny, double it 32 times, and it totals $40 million. It's called the magic of compounding. And our national debt is compounding. See, we have to pay 5% interest on the national debt. Now in the early days, 1900, you know, we had less than $1 billion worth of debt. And then one day it was 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. Now $7 trillion is $7,000 billion. $7,000 billion. It's going up now by $1 trillion a year. It's starting to develop a snowball effect now. And that national debt's going to eat us alive. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We've got $150 trillion worth of derivatives sitting out there, and we're surety underwriters for all of that. And then you know all this bank debt that's out there? We're the surety underwriters for all of that debt. And then you know all the savings and loans? We're the surety underwriters for all of that debt. Did you know that? Just as an aside and as a matter of law, you Americans are the surety underwriters for all that debt. You can't even pay the interest on that debt, much less service the debt or repay it. What you really need is a jubilee. You need a jubilee year to free you from that debt. Fortunately for you, the God of heaven, the God of Isaac and Abraham and Jacob, has built into this law a stop sign for geometric progression. It's called the year of release. And then there's a second one called the jubilee. Now, you people don't practice this. And fortunately for you, God is going to step up to the plate after you have lost everything that you've got, after you have been totally impoverished. He's not going to do this until you learn your lesson first. He's not going to save you out of your economic troubles until you first learn how to count. So I just thought I would put on a little series of programs here. Some of you people might want to learn how to count before you lose everything you've got. So there's a few of you out there, if you can learn to count, by the end of this series of programs over here, you might be able to save some of your toys. You will not save all of your toys, but you can save some of your toys. I've got to tell you a little story here while I'm at this juncture of our debate. There's a monkey called the rhesus monkey. Cute little critter. Now, sometimes when you catch an animal, like I've got a save a heart, or a have a heart, I guess it is, have a heart trap out here. It's a big box trap, so what it is. And you put bait down at the end of it, and the coon comes along. He sees that bait, and he can't get in there until he comes to the door. He goes through the door, and he goes down there, and when he touches that bait, it trips the latch, and the door slams shut. And we catch him in the trap. He can't get out because the door's locked. He's trapped. That's why we call that a trap. Now, there's another way that you can trap an animal. Another way to trap animals. And this is a neat way to do this. The rhesus monkey. They take a birdcage out into the jungle, out into the forest, and they put a peanut in the middle of it, and they hang the peanut on a string. Now the bars of this birdcage are very close together. But the little rhesus monkey, if he holds his hand open and flat, it will fit through the bars, so that he can reach in and grab the peanut. Now, when he grabs the peanut, his hand forms into a fist, which is now about 5 times bigger than his hand when it's flat. Now, his hand when it's flat will just exactly fit through the bars. As soon as he grabs the peanut, his hand now has expanded to 5 times what it was, and when he goes to pull his hand through the bars, he can't, because his fist is too big and it won't fit through the bars. Now, the little rhesus monkey actually is not trapped. He's not trapped because if at any time he lets go of the peanut, his hand will become flat and it will fit through the bars and he can escape. But no rhesus monkey has ever been known to let go of the peanut. Now, when God said, the root of all evil is money, if we want to trap an American, all we have to do is to bait the birdcage with a $50 bill. All we have to do is to bait the birdcage with Social Security, Medicare, or any other free government program. And no American has ever been known to let go of the benefits. Now, Americans are not trapped by our Federal Reserve or paper money monetary system. God would not allow that. Now, if you'll take a look at our history, from 1787 on, we had gold and silver coin. We had gold and silver coin along with paper money, the United States National Bank, which was vetoed by Andrew Jackson in 1836. We had gold and silver money from 1836 to 1862 when Abraham Lincoln started making greenbacks. The United States Treasury started printing paper money. We had paper money along with state banks, states chartered banks. We have always had paper money along with gold and silver coin. The paper money has always brought boom and bust cycles. Paper money, unjust weights and balances, have always produced in America boom and bust cycles, depressions, poverty. Until finally, we decided we needed to solve that problem, and our leaders told us in 1913 that what we needed was a central bank to eliminate boom and bust cycles and depressions and recessions. That's why we rely upon our God, the United States of America, and our leaders, Arthur Burns, and our new Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan. These Fed chairmen, they are the directors of our economy. We rely upon these good fellows, these good men, to protect us from these vagaries of boom and bust cycles. Have they done that for us? Did they do that in 1921 and 22? Did they do it in 1929 to 35? Did they do it in 1958, 1979, 1973 and 74, 1989 and 90? Did they do it in 19, or the year 2000. You know, we've been in boom and bust cycles, and we call them recessions now. We don't like depressions. But, you know, we depend upon our government to give us Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation. We have 108 benefits that come to us through Social Security. Can you tell me of any American that ever let go of the government benefit and freed himself from the paper money trap? Write me a letter. Tell me about one, would you? You're not trapped by Social Security. You can rescind Social Security. You're not trapped by your bank. Your government is manufacturing gold and silver coins every day. 5% of the people in this country own 100% of the gold and silver in the country. 95% of the country are penniless. 95% of the people in the country have paper money. 5% of us have gold and silver. Now, I don't have any of these paper debentures. I don't have stocks and bonds and Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I looked at this problem and I said, you know, I think I need to let go of this peanut and get the hell out of here before some big fella comes along and grabs a hold of me. Americans have been trapped like the pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp. We Americans bought into Social Security like a great big bass, big mouth bass, just grabbed a hold of that hook, and we ain't letting go. Now, unfortunately, when you bite a hook, it's got a barb in it, and you can't let go. You might shake it off. You might pull it out. But that's a trap. Social Security isn't the trap like a hook or like a have-a-heart trap. You have to hang on. Now, you're motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And your five motivators, along with the love of money, is the root of all evil. Coupled with Medicare, Social Security, and these 108 government benefits have entrapped and ensnared America and Americans as surely as a peanut in a birdcage in the middle of the forest. The rhesus monkey ain't letting go of that peanut, and Americans are not letting go of their welfare benefits. Well, next time we'll take up the pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp, and I'll tell you that story, and set the stage for the story that we're revealing here in the national debt. It's a wild story, isn't it? All right, we're just about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right here. Remember that the Law Hour is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. It says our time is up, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, goodbye, friends.